Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the disappointed Pod Vader edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. We'll talk about that in a moment. But it's not a disappointing edition of the podcast. Oh no, we've got some fantastic content coming up for you here later on. We're going to be talking with a guy that I consider a mentor in terms of broadcasting, Todd Wright, who's hosting his own fantasy football podcast. He'll talk about that. We'll also talk about his Cowboys, a little bit of the history of the Cowboys and sort of where they're at so far this season. And we'll also have a monster Thursday night game. My boyfriend's on the side, the Raiders, against my boyfriend's, the Kansas City Chiefs. Talk about awkward. We'll be talking about that. And I have a feeling the super fans might be talking about that as well. But, you know, I'm disappointed because I had said about three or four weeks ago that I had pretty much locked up a playoff spot in the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Football Expert League. And I didn't. I didn't pull it off. I do blame Rob Gronkowski. It's his fault. I didn't have him. I lost pretty much every game that he wasn't available in. He was my number one pick. And so that's where it is. I placed the blame solely on him, not on me. Not for the fact that I had Golden Tate sitting on my bench. And if I had played him, I would have won my matchup against Matt Chatham of Team Football by Football. But, you know, it's Rob Gronkowski's fault. With that said, good luck, Matt Chatham, as you have pulled the, you will be facing the number one seed. That is Team Her Fantasy Football. Ashley Williams and the Williams sisters have just been crushing it this year. It is a 2-week playoff. I have a fun feeling that that is going to be a score that will be more than doubled. On the other side of the bracket, we have Jay from Razzballs, the number 2 seed, the number 3 seed, D-Rex from Pyromaniac.com. D-Rex, when I had him on the show, said he wasn't scared of Jay's team. He said he wasn't scared of the Williams sisters either. Jay's only lost has been against Her Fantasy Football. Her Fantasy Football's only lost has been to Jay at Razzball. I have a feeling those two teams are going to end up colliding in the championship, but we'll see. We've got 2 weeks to find out what's going to happen. Meanwhile, in the consolation ladder, I am the only team with a winning record in the consolation brackets. You don't really care about that, nor do I. I'll play it out because that's what I do. I like to play out the season no matter what. I am facing Wally Sperlin of Team Fantasy Sharks, and that's just for ha-has and hoo-has. And anyway, who cares about consolations? Because that just means you're an even bigger loser than the guy who finishes in second place. Or gal. But I really don't think the gals are finishing in second. I think this is their league to win. So there you go. If you want to email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. Be sure to check out all of our written stuff on our website. That's www.nextfanup.wordpress.com. And here is my guest. It's been a long time. He's been on the show once before, but he's back again. It's been a long time since he was on the show the last time. But now is the perfect time to bring him in. Too many references to time. This is, I don't know, I guess a guy I consider sort of a mentor for me when it comes to broadcasting. We worked together a long time ago at ESPN Radio on the All Night program. It is Todd Wright, host of the Todd Wright Fantasy Podcast. Hello, Todd. It's been a long time.
My name Jay. It's been since last football season, probably about 54 or 55 weeks since we last did this.
Wow. Has it really been that close to a year ago? That's way too long. Way too long. What's going on? You're now hosting a podcast.
Yes. It has gone very well. I decided to throw myself even more into fantasy football as I commission a 10-team league. I play in a 14-team league, both standard scoring, although there are some rules in the 14-team league that I do not commission that I call stupid scoring. I also got very involved with daily fantasy the more the season went on last year. So I just I stopped doing as much with totals and Vegas lines, and stopped playing Survivor Pool, and just decided that in addition to following the Cowboys and just my love for football overall, I would almost exclusively just play and follow fantasy football this year. And a lot of that channels into the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast. It has been very successful from the moment we dropped the first podcast back in August as people were preparing for their drafts. It is in conjunction with my good friends that run JoeBucksFan.com, which is the number two online destination for Buccaneers fans for football information. And while I am not necessarily a Buccaneers fan, I do live and love the city of Tampa and the greater Tampa Bay area. So there are a number of people in the greater Tampa Bay area who were quick to catch on to the Fantasy Football Podcast, who know it's not biased towards or against any of the Buccaneers, and it obviously is out there for everyone who has ever followed me nationally or just people that are looking for a second opinion on fantasy football. And it will continue through the Super Bowl. That's the wonderful world of daily, is that you can combine the Pro Bowl with the Super Bowl and get a game out of it in daily. And I've just really enjoyed it, one name. And, yeah, the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast is available every Friday morning on JoeBucksFan.com. And within the last couple of months, it has been available also on iTunes. So thank you for allowing me to promote it. And we will evolve the podcast after the football season ends. I'm not sure how we will evolve it, but it will continue beyond just fantasy football, but it is currently fantasy football intensive.
Well, I mean, there's so many different things you can do in the off season, even fantasy wise, to discuss. True. You know, there's dynasty leagues out there. You could get yourself involved in one of those. You don't have time for that. You're spending way too much time out on the golf course.
I do. Every day. Today it rained.
Oh.
About the first time it rained here since early October in Tampa, Florida. So I did not hit balls today. It was a rest day and a day to do some things to coordinate my next event that I'm hosting, the Todd Wright Holiday Invitational. And then I have my Sunday before the Super Bowl event that I host annually on January 29th with, ironically, at a course that is the sponsor of my podcast, the Eagles Golf Club. And golf has become a big part of my life. But football, once and always, is a big part of my life. One name, my last golf tournament I hosted was the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Golf Tournament, where
nice.
We had people go out and they played for a score on the golf course. And that was one set of scoring. But before they went out on the golf course, we did a live daily fantasy draft out in their golf carts in the staging area for those days' games. And depending on how your players did, that was your handicap. So I think that was when Tom Brady went off and Terrence West had a good game. So whatever the foursome was that drafted Tom Brady and Terrence West earned enough points. And the more points you earn, the more I subtracted from your golf score. So they won the golf plus fantasy football division. And that in golf is what we call a net. So it was a lot of fun. So we had a lot of people out there combining two of my loves, golf and football.
That's what I love about you, Todd. You always came up with the best ways of introducing one aspect of pop culture to another aspect of pop culture and merging them. You do that so effortlessly.
Well, and you and I are involved. I knew this was going to come up at some point. When I tell people that I'm in a league for the TV show Survivor, or I'm in a league for the TV show Big Brother, they look at me and say, "What do you mean you're in a league?" And I said, "Well, we watch one episode and then we draft players, and we follow along our players. It's not so much a point system." I've often wondered if some of the people in our league. I guess we could say Louise, our former coworker at ESPN, is our commissioner of these leagues. If she would employ a point system for, say, winning challenges, winning head of household, winning power of veto, basically we just award whoever has the person that wins the show. And they look at us and say, why haven't I thought of that? So I think one name, you know, you share in that because we do it even off a reality television show, because basically they are game shows. So, yeah, you share some of that as well. It's just, as Mark Cuban likes to say on Shark Tank, it's always nice to have a little skin in the game. And whether it's the TV show Survivor or Big Brother or Fantasy Football or a Survivor League, or playing, as I often do when I go to Vegas, and playing my parlays, that skin in the game, it just makes it a little more interesting.
Let's talk about your Dallas Cowboys, and I'm interested to hear your take. I was not on the show when Bledsoe got Brady'd, and so now Romo's been dacked. And I see huge correlations between the two events. And I'm curious if what your feelings are about Dak Prescott and Tony Romo.
Sure. Similar, not identical at all. I will always remember, will remind all your listeners, 2001 to 2006, I was a season ticket holder at Texas Stadium for the Cowboys. One year I even had four tickets. Every other year I had two. I would fly from Florida to Dallas for most of the regular season games and the occasional playoff game. From 2001 to 2006, there weren't many playoff games because most of the time it was rotating quarterbacks, people like Chad Hutchinson, Ryan Leaf, Quincy Carter. There were no playoff hopes out there. Bill Parcells took over. I'll remember I was at an Outback Bowl game on New Year's Day between Michigan and Florida when the news came down that Jerry was hiring Bill Parcells. So I knew some things were going to change. I was at the Monday night game in Texas Stadium, Cowboys-Giants. The first half had not gone particularly well for the Cowboys, and I wasn't really paying attention. I had run up to the stadium club for a drink at halftime. I'm just getting back to my seat. And after the first play, the PA announcer just sort of says, now quarterbacking for the Cowboys, number 9, Tony Romo. And everyone sort of looked at each other. We all knew Romo was on the roster, but there was never talk about Romo playing. So the thought was, Bledsoe must be injured. And then we sort of all figured out as the game went on, you know, this is 10-plus years ago, no, Bledsoe was benched. And basically, it was just time to make the change and go forward. And that was the beginning of the Tony Romo era, which for most of that era wasn't very good. Whether it was that Romo wasn't a big-time quarterback or that the Cowboys, just quarterbacked by Romo, were not a big-time team. Then that changed 2 years ago when Romo, with a wonderful running game led by DeMarco Murray, won the NFC East, won a playoff game against the Lions, and then basically was a still disputed replay challenge or just replay a rule on a catch and what is and isn't involving Dez Bryant. From being in a position to beat the Packers, I will never say the Cowboys would have beaten the Packers if Dez had been ruled to have caught the ball. Aaron Rodgers still had 5 minutes to get the Packers down the field to score the points necessary to win the game. But once that catch was overturned, one name, I actually turned the game off. I'm like, well, it's been a good season. It's over. I didn't like the rule, and that rule has since been modified somewhat, where if that play happened now, Dez's catch would stand. Which I brought up when people said, well, the Cowboys got away with the hands to the face on the Sam Bradford two-point conversion. I said, I'll make you a deal. You can have the Vikings having another shot at the two-point conversion in a regular season game down 17-15 if I can have Dez Bryant catching the ball at the one-yard line in the divisional playoff at Lambeau with 5 minutes to go. and then that sort of ends the argument. Sometimes things go your way and sometimes they don't. Sometimes you like the rule and sometimes you don't. So Romo gained the position because Bledsoe was not performing well enough. Dak Prescott gained the position because Romo couldn't play. And Prescott played so well, and the Cowboys played so well around him, that it was only sensible for the organization to continue on the path that they are currently on. Whether you think it was entirely Tony Romo's decision, or you think it was an organizational decision where Romo was put out front and was able to say that he agreed with the decision and he had Dax back. And that's what I think the difference is. I do like that I have always said one name for the better part of the last 10 years. There were four quarterbacks that most women hated in the NFL. Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, Michael Vick, and Tony Romo. And I don't think I need to go over all the reasons why, and some women wouldn't agree. If a woman is a Patriots fan, she loves Tom Brady. But if she's not, she probably hates Tom Brady. I don't need to get into the Ben Roethlisberger thing. I don't need to talk about the Michael Vick thing. Women just sort of looked at Romo if they weren't a Cowboys fan and they saw a loser. That went away 2 years ago, and then when he made the comments he made and basically put to rest that he wanted his job back, even though Dak had won 8 or 9 in a row at that point, I think that changed the perception of Romo, and now you have a lot of people out there rooting for Tony Romo to have another chapter in his career, whether it is this season, in relief of Dak Prescott, if something negative happens to Prescott, namely injury, or that Romo has a second chapter the way Peyton Manning did, where the Colts moved on from Peyton Manning because they knew they had something they liked in Andrew Luck, and Peyton Manning eventually did get his moment winning last year's Super Bowl after being benched for Brock Osweiler and going out a champion. So I like that Tony Romo, who I've always thought is a super individual and may be, one name, the last undrafted starting quarterback of significance in the National Football League. These just don't happen. Quarterbacks are so overvalued. Guys go in the first round who shouldn't. Guys go in the second round who should. Tony Romo was undrafted and just stashed on the roster by the Cowboys a decade or so ago. So I'm happy for Tony Romo, even though he's not playing. I think all of a sudden people look at him now and they're kind of rooting for him, whether it's in Dallas or somewhere else.
Are the Cowboys the best team in the NFL? They have the best record, but are they the best team?
They are right now. Hey, to quote Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are. And they are that record. They are beatable. But for 3 months, no one has beaten them. And I've always believed the more close games you lose, the more close games you're going to lose. The more close games you win, the more close games you're going to win. The Cowboys, Thanksgiving Day was a good example. Dallas was never in a position where they put away the Redskins. And the Redskins kept coming. The Redskins threw for 500 yards. Kirk Cousins was never sacked. The Redskins didn't turn the ball over. Yet Dallas never looked like they were going to lose the game. Not once. And not once to an unbiased observer, and I've talked to some Redskins fans since. And that's the sign of a team that knows how to win. They have learned how to win. I think of last year's Carolina Panthers at 15-1, and I look at these Cowboys with the one loss, and I see some similarities. And I do wonder when the Cowboys, when that loss comes, how they handle it, or how they handle a bad game. They have been challenged. The Vikings game last Thursday was a challenge. They found a way to win that game. Right now, they are the best team in the NFL. But you play to win in the postseason, not the regular season. And basically, every year since Tom Brady took over for Drew Bledsoe, the Patriots have been the team to beat. And until Tom Brady or Bill Belichick or both are not there, they will continue to be the team to beat until someone beats them.
Two more questions for you. Are you concerned at all about the rookie wall for either or both of those two rookies you have on offense?
No. I'm not concerned just based on what I've seen and how well they play. I'm not. It may happen, but I'm not concerned about it. Another reason is, look, I'm not saying Dallas's game at the Giants on Sunday night is going to be easy. I don't think it will be. The Giants defense has played very well in spots this season, and even in a loss to the Steelers in a game at Pittsburgh, they couldn't be expected to get the 7 sacks they did the week before against Cleveland. But the Giants have some good things going defensively. But if the Cowboys win that game, they clinch the division, and depending on what Detroit does, they might clinch the number one seed. The Cowboys may be able to play the final 3 weeks, or at least the final 2 weeks of the regular season, as if they're starting another preseason, and then factor in a one-week bye before their first home playoff game. So that might even take the rookie wall out of it. And then people will talk about rust or whatever, how the Cowboys are going to handle this, how much is Romo going to play, how much is Alfred Morris going to play. But I think that takes the rookie wall out of it if Ezekiel Elliott doesn't have to carry the ball 25 to 30 times in week 15, 16, and 17 and can carry it maybe 8 to 10 times in those games or not at all even in a week 17 and then another week off before the playoff game. Things actually set up pretty well for them to avoid that.
Nice. And how about that Giants game? How do you see that matchup going down?
Giants are an interesting team to me. I think the Giants are, there are a lot of bad teams in the NFL. The Giants are not one of them. But I think the Giants are propped up a little bit because there are so many bad teams in the NFL. The Giants spent a lot of money on defensive players, and it has paid off. And as I said, like in the last month, that defense has surged. In the first month of the season, Eli Manning was horrible. I mean, just dreadful. He hasn't been dreadful the last 2 months. He's give you a fancy term. I mean, he's more of a home road split guy. Kirk Cousins used to be a home road split guy, not so much anymore. Drew Brees, a home road split guy. What holds the Giants back, they have no running game. People who are Giants fans get excited when Rashard Jennings busts off 2 runs in a game. It doesn't solve your problem. It doesn't mean you have a running game. Some of that may be you don't have an offensive line that can run block. And at times, they can't pass block. And Eli doesn't try to make plays. Eli just gives up on the play. Now, there's something to be said for that because he's not turning the ball over. But you need to look no further back, you know, what seems like 10 years ago when the Vikings were the only undefeated team in the NFL. Watch Eli in that game against the Viking defense, and it just shows you he'll give up on a play. He doesn't want to get hit, and he's not going to try and try and try to make a play. Now, of course he did in the Super Bowl to David Tyree, but he won't in just a situation like that. So I think there are still a lot of problems on the offensive line. And defensively, as a unit, they can still play better, and they are getting there. So that presents some difficulties for the Cowboys. If they can just slow Ezekiel Elliott, make the Cowboys play behind the chains a little bit. The Cowboys often play in front of the chains. And I think all Giants fans would agree. Jason Witten is getting in the Hall of Fame because of his play against the New York Giants. Jason Witten's biggest games tend to come against the New York Giants for whatever reason. He has always put up big numbers against them. So it's not a mismatch for the Giants. It's a game they need to have. If they can win the game, they can go on and win the division. It's actually there for them. The Cowboys could be a 13-3 wild card, believe it or not. But it's going to take a quality game out of Eli and Odell Beckham Jr. In addition to a solid game overall from the Giant defense, controlling Jason Witten, don't let him beat you, not letting Dez Bryant get free for big passes down the field, and making sure that Ezekiel Elliott is not getting yardage on first and second down. It's a very competitive game, and one I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to on Sunday night.
It's a big one, and this show has brought up way too many emotions for me, talking about the demise of Drew Bledsoe, and you brought up a play in a game that I don't recall ever being played. Wow, I have a lot to deal with at this
point.
What
was the play in the game that you don't remember being played? What did I say?
You mentioned something about this David Tyree fellow. He made some catch in some game. I don't recall that game being played.
Because of your Patriots allegiances, I've often spoken about this, especially over the last couple of years, with how Deflategate just wouldn't go away. And people just ask me about the Patriots and do you root for them or root against them? And I say, I have no problem with the Patriots. I said, I don't have to like a team to respect that they win. In the 80s, as a huge NBA fan, I hated the Celtics and I hated the Lakers. And it took until I got older to realize the reason I hated them was because they were so good. Mm. And I just couldn't accept that they were that good because I rooted for the Dr. J and the 76ers. Now that I'm older and just flat out older and wiser, I appreciate what the Patriots do. And for people to say, well, they cheat. Come on. Look, understand they will push and push and push and push. And there are other coaches who have found a way to win who do that too, like John Harbaugh with the holding penalty on the punt.
Oh, yeah.
On the safety with 12 seconds to go. This is the same John Harbaugh that complained the Patriots were throwing the ball to tackle eligibles out of illegal formations. I respect Belichick and I respect Brady. I saw Brady's last college game, an Orange Bowl game that Michigan beat Alabama in overtime, when Brady wasn't the focus of that game. It was a wideout on the Wolverines. It was a wideout on the Crimson Tide, and I think one of the running backs. And I said, it's kind of odd to me. The Cowboys and the Patriots have never gotten in each other's way. They really haven't. Now, granted, the Cowboys, it's been 21 years since they've been to a Super Bowl. So the Patriots have had their run, but they don't get in each other's way. That could all change in Houston in early February, and it would be spectacular to see these Patriots face these Cowboys. But seriously, one name, you're a Patriots fan. Can you think of, when you think of the Cowboys, you have any issue with the Cowboys? Because they really haven't done anything to your Patriots. They don't play very much. They haven't gotten in each other's way in a Super Bowl or anything like that. They don't really cross paths. They're two of the more influential owners in the National Football League. So that's why I don't have a problem with the Patriots, and I respect that they win, and they win big.
No, I mean, the Patriots and the Cowboys, I can't even remember the last two times those teams met. It's been a while.
Last year they met around week 4, week 5, because Brady had to serve the suspension, I believe the fourth would have been against Dallas, and it was dropped, and he went off against the Cowboys. But so there was a game last year, because generally the cross schedule, it's been like one every 4 years. They are big time NFL franchises that have huge fan bases, not only in their regions but all across the country. They're both love hate teams. I mean, you can find as many people that hate Brady and hate Belichick and hate the Patriots, and they hate Jerry Jones and they hate the Cowboys. The one thing I have noticed is these people who hate the Cowboys, they still hate the Cowboys, but they're like, man, that Prescott is good. Boy, that pick of Ezekiel Elliott has really worked out. It's kind of like the way I felt about the Celtics in the 80s and the Lakers in the 80s and how I hated them both. They're two outstanding franchises. We are not guaranteed that they will be playing in the Super Bowl. But one name, you as a Patriot fan, me as a Cowboy fan, we can dare to dream. And you know what? It would be one heck of a game in a year where the TV ratings have been down, 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 down. You put Brady and the Pats against Dak and the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
In Super Bowl 51, and you find me a television that game won't be on.
Yeah, that's the most watched Super Bowl in history. There's way too many storylines in that one. That's the game, obviously, I'm biased and would love to see, but I do want to see those storylines. And I would fear, knowing my history, that it would not go in the way that I would like it to ultimately finish. Awesome.
I feel the same way. That shows we're fans of our teams, but we have reasonable expectations. I feel the exact same way about a Cowboys Super Bowl against the Patriots as you feel about a Patriots Super Bowl against the Cowboys, that in the end, our team might just come up short.
Todd, it is always good to catch up with you. And people, you can go and listen to the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Show on iTunes, or what's that website again?
Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast, delivered by Papa John's, just like that ESPN2 family fantasy football show. I am also delivered by Papa John's, and the podcast is available. It posts every Friday on joebucksfan.com.
There you go. Todd Wright, everybody. Thanks, Todd.
No problem. One name.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is finally time. This is the true prize fight that Monty, I, and all the other AFC West guys have been talking about for practically a year now. I mean, certainly as soon as that schedule came out, I mean, we had this marked down, the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Oakland Raiders in Arrowhead on Thursday Night Football. Late in the season, we knew this was going to be critical for not only the AFC West, but likely for the conference. And sure enough, it is. This could be for the number two seed. It could be, I mean, in the end, I mean, it's possible this could be for the number one seed. This is a battle royale between two teams that have decades of hating each other behind them. But it's been really the first time in probably 25 years that both these teams have been good. And so, bam, this is going to be awesome. I am here with our Raiders superfan Monty, my nemesis. And so first off there, nemesis, what are you drinking for this particular battle?
You know, in honor of the big game out in Oakland last week, I'm drinking a Kentucky Straight Bourbon, Buffalo Trace. Don't know if you're familiar with it, but, you know, in honor of stomping the Bills last week, I thought I'd go that route tonight.
Nice. Very fitting. Just a nerd out of myself, I am actually hitting gin over ice. It is the 11th hour gin from the Brooklyn-based craft distillery, Heights Distilling. It's good stuff. Check it out if you're in New York. But with that underway...
The NFL did us a favor, put this game on Thursday night, so it's really the only game we need to preview in this next Fan Up podcast. So get comfortable. Pour yourself a drink, get a backup drink in hand, and let's get comfortable and get into this.
Let's just do this for an hour. Yeah, sure. All right. Well, first up, for anybody who does not know, you can definitely email us at any time. We love the feedback. We love having our commenters on the show. And I'm just going to start this off with the voice of the people. And the people are the fans on the next Fan Up podcast. We got this email in from another Chiefs fan named Nick, and I swear this is not me. But he writes in, "Hey, Pod Vader. Love the show. Can you have Jar Jar Binks, a.k.a. Monty the Raiders superfan, comment on something for me? Ask him what hurts worse as a Raiders fan. One, Bo Jackson playing for the Kansas City Royals. Two, Marcus Allen retiring as a Chief. Three, the inevitability that the Raiders are going to move cities yet again because they've never had a truly loyal fan base. Or four, the fact that they are about to lose to the Super Bowl-bound Chiefs for the fifth straight time. Sincerely, another Chiefs fan named Nick."
All right. So I'd say I'm going to take the option you didn't notice. It hurts more that you would try to pawn off your own email to take some hurtful Raiders history and throw it in my face. And you didn't even bother to change the name on the email. You could have made something up, man. Come on.
This totally was not me. This particular Nick, I'm not going to give you his last name. It's in his email address, but it begins with an H, which is not what my last name begins with. You can see on Twitter. And this went through Pod Vader. There are witnesses.
I love Bo Jackson, so the fact that he played for the Royals was amazing. I guess to answer his question would be the Marcus Allen thing, man. Loved Marcus, one of the three league MVPs the Raiders have had, and how him and Al Davis had a falling out is probably, you know, the biggest kick in the guts.
All right, fair enough. But I do hear that we are not only getting Chiefs fan mail about this battle that's coming up, but we got some Raiders fan mail as well.
Yeah, that's right. We were tweeted by Mr. JP Manahan, who I'm assuming is 40. He's a man, and he's ready to watch the Raiders go into Arrowhead and, you know, pull off a big victory. He told me to raise my glass and get after it. So shout out to John Paul. Cheers. And hope you enjoy the game this Thursday. But I think we should probably talk about the other elephant in the room, and that is, you know, Pod Vader's been on record saying that, you know, he's got a thing for the Chiefs this year, you know, going so far as to call you his boyfriend, and then the younger, sexier Oakland Raiders just seem to be catching his eye. I don't know if that's troubling to you and Chiefs fans, but you know, it's just that I think that's the way of the world. These old guys like Pod Vader like the young, sexy, like what the Raiders have got going on.
Oh, man, there's nothing I enjoy more than the fact that Pod Vader has finally started cheating on the Chiefs as his boyfriend. I mean, because that kiss of death needs to be, you know, totally just wiped off of the Chiefs' lips before playoff time. I mean, Pod Vader is basically worse than the Madden cover when it comes to his effect on teams and their health and viability in this league. So, yes, you can have him. Pod Vader is all yours.
Well, I don't say we're taking him. I'm just saying that, you know, he's got his eye on us. I don't think the Raiders fan want any of that either. Much love to Mr. Pod Vader, but, yeah, I don't think anybody wants the curse of what he did to the Falcons last year.
Well, I will tell you what I have my eye on, and that is that this is not just, you know, this game is not just like a long time coming for this season or last season, although we've been talking for now a couple of years about how I've actually been excited to see the Raiders become a little bit better, you know, and have this rivalry be meaningful and to have, you know, and be amped up for these games. But this has been going back several years because, you know, both of our franchises were pretty crappy in the 2000s. The Chiefs were bad for a long time, and finally they started getting good in the, you know, the 2010s. And yet we've been, despite being a fairly solid team, a talented team for the last 5-6 years, we've been playing second fiddle in this division to the Denver Broncos the entire time. It has been so aggravating being a good team that just can't get the division, always just a little bit short, coming in on the wild card a few times. And finally, this was a year with Denver taking a couple of steps back that it was the Chiefs' time to just take this thing over. And who appears but the upstart, as you said, young and sexy Raiders. And you know what? No. It is time for the Chiefs to take that front chair. We're going to be first fiddle, darn it. And you guys are not taking this away from us.
Yeah, and from where I'm sitting, I'm going to suggest that window of your team being good and playing second fiddle is rapidly closing because, you know, have we seen the end of a brilliant career from Jamal Charles? That guy's a game changer. Spencer Ware can play running back. He's had a few good games, but I'm looking at the stats right now, and your Chiefs offense is, you know, towards the bottom of the league in rushing, and Andy Reid and Alex Smith are kind of a conservative team that are relying on the run game. And I'm wondering if your window has closed with some of those injuries you had in the playoffs the last couple of years. And it's time to just get out of the way and let the young Raiders team do their thing, man.
Well, I'm glad you brought up injuries because, first of all, I mean, Jamal Charles, he's had like, what, 5 touches this season, and the Chiefs are 9-3. I think we're okay without him still. But the other big thing, and we are recording this on Tuesday night, but taking a nice little look at the injury report finally, in terms of the participation in the Tuesday practices, for the first time this entire season, it is an absolutely clean slate. We're getting Jeremy Maclin back. We're getting Dee Ford back healthy. Phillip Gaines, you know, who are basically our number two corner, didn't play against the Falcons last week. He's coming back. We got Dontari Poe, Kendall Reyes back. And whereas you guys are beat up as you have been, as beat up as you have been all season. You got Shalik Calhoun wasn't practicing, no Carl Joseph, no defensive tackles, Darius Latham or Stacey McGee. Kelechi Assemble was limited. You guys are getting, finally, the healthiest Kansas City Chiefs team that 2016 has seen, while you guys are beat up coming off on a short week, coming into Arrowhead in the cold. Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, the thing about having such a young team and a lot of those rookie deals is we do have a little bit of depth. So Carl Joseph is the biggest injury on that list, first round draft pick. But it's not like Nate Allen has, you know, not started games in the NFL. He has a nose for the ball. He's gotten a few turnovers as a Raider. So I'm expecting him to come in and make some plays. DJ Hayden, who went on IR, who's not on the injury report. That's another injury that kind of stings. So our already, you know, kind of weak secondary, we've got some issues there. But both TJ Carey and Keith McGill III, I believe, both have experience starting. Our defensive tackles, I think that's really going to hurt. So we've got Big Dan Williams and Justin Ellis, who are going to have to play more snaps and not be able to rotate out and stay as fresh as you would like. But I fully expect Kelechi Assemble to play. KO will be in there, no problem. But the secondary and then our defensive backs, our defensive tackles, I think that's going to be, if you guys are going to be able to do anything, that's what we're going to have to keep an eye on. But we do have a little bit of depth, so all the injuries we've had on the offensive line has allowed us to have quality starts and quality snaps from three of our tackles. So I'm expecting to see Austin Howard, Vidal Alexander, and Menelik Watson all rotating in to kind of help battle the Justin Houstons of the world. And the one positive, if you're looking forward down the road into December and January, is I'm not holding my breath to see him playing on Thursday night, but Mario Edwards Jr. has started practicing again, so he's going to be a huge lift to our defensive line and our pass rush.
Well, I mean, it's good that you guys appear to have some depth. I think that's glazing over, you know, a general lack of depth. I mean, that's something we've been talking about since the offseason. But, you know, and even talking about your strong points, and granted, I mean, by the way, you mentioned what I think is going to be, you know, possibly the biggest matchup is just that injured defensive line against our running attack. We may not have been producing, you know, a ton of just net yards this season, but looking at that and looking at what Buffalo did to you guys on the ground with Shady McCoy rushing for like 6 yards per carry, I think Spencer Ware is going to get his against that. But the big thing is that everybody who's just looking at this game is just like, oh, well, you know, Derek Carr keeps on coming back and winning these ones. He's in the MVP discussion. This is the high-flying offense that the Chiefs are not going to have an answer for. Well, first of all, you know, look at what we did to the Falcons this weekend. And also, look at what Derek Carr has done against the Chiefs in his entire career. I mean, there's just like, basically, there's no worse matchup than Carr against the Chiefs. And it's not something that's gotten better over time. It's arguably gotten worse. Pulling up his career stats against the Chiefs, he has a completion percentage of 57.7%, 6 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, a QB rating of 72, compared with, by the way, Alex Smith against the Raiders has a 62.8% completion rate, 18 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, QB rate of 107, also, you know, 7.8 yards per attempt versus Derek Carr is just 5.3 in this same matchup. The fact is that Carr just always, always flubs against the Chiefs. And somehow Alex Smith plays his best ball against him in the other way.
Say for once, I bet you that Mr. Carr will always have a soft spot for the Kansas City Chiefs, because his rookie season, he went 0-10, very long season, got his first NFL win against the Kansas City Chiefs on a Thursday night football game. And that was kind of the breakout game for Latavius Murray. And the first time we guys played you guys this year, Murray was out. And I think that kind of hampers our game. Everyone talks about the high-flying Raiders offense, but it's also kind of anchored in their run game. And they've got two good change of pace running backs. But Latavius Murray is kind of the engine that makes this offense go. And he's back, and he's not on the injury report. And I'm expecting him to be able to get his. The only thing I will say about this particular matchup for Derek Carr is, yep, he has been on record this week saying he's really got to focus on his time management skills because there's so much national media asking for interviews to talk about his MVP caliber season. I'm sure Alex Smith doesn't have to worry about anything like that. And so he's got all the time he needs to, you know, check down to his running backs out of the backfield while Derek Carr's out there, you know, doing some press.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Smith is never going to be the flashy guy who's going to get the press, and we're totally fine with that. We're also never going to be a big media town in Kansas City, which I guess the Raiders may be suffering more and more from that in Vegas. But the other thing I just want to point out is you say KO is going to start, but the biggest thing with Carr and the reason why they've so heavily invested in that offensive line in Oakland is just because Carr is just so much better when he's not pressured. And that's going back to college. I mean, he's just always has a tendency that once he gets a little bit rattled, he starts, you know, I guess the hero gene in him kicks in a bad way, and he starts just making a ton of bad throws. And the thing is with the Chiefs right now, it's not just about, you know, the traditional now trio of Justin Houston, Dee Ford, and Tamba Hali all healthy. I mean, we're getting pass rush from the middle, too. Not only, you know, Dontari Poe being healthy is big. And Chris Jones, I mean, this is a guy who's really flown under the radar for the Chiefs all this season. PFF's been loving him, though. He hasn't had a ton of sacks, but just in terms of his effectiveness, he's just a monster on the defensive line. He's actually, they just listed him as their third guy in terms of pass rushing productivity among interior defenders. Third in the league behind Aaron Donald and Geno Atkins, and ahead of $100 million man Fletcher Cox. I mean, this guy's a second-round pick, and we're getting great stuff out of him. I think no matter, you know, although that Oakland offensive line has been better than it has been in years past, there's going to be a lot of trouble there. And Oakland's, I mean, Derek Carr is not going to have the option to set up these big, you know, deep, heroic passes. I mean, they're going to have to switch to a short passing game, which is, you know, very well suited to the Chiefs press man scheme and you know, the overall Chiefs defensive scheme, which is aimed at trying to get their front seven in your face and keep the keep the action contained.
Strength on strength. So I think you're definitely one of the better defenses in the league. Your pass rush is good, but the Raiders offensive line, I mean, like you said, they assembled this offensive line to win this division. They've been phenomenal in pass protection. They've been road graders in the running game. And I think the game plan for this matchup is going to be exactly what you saw on Sunday Night Football against a phenomenal Denver Broncos defense. They're going to line up six offensive linemen, and they're going to run it right at you. And if you want to blitz and bring pressure, I'll take my chances with Crabtree or Cooper or even Seth Roberts across the middle. I think that's a strength on strength that's going to be a good matchup. I definitely don't think you have a huge advantage there. If anything, I would say, you know, from what I've been seeing from this offensive line, when they're all healthy, they'll go toe-to-toe with any defensive line.
It is going to be an interesting matchup because the Chiefs have actually graded out, I mean, in terms of their just ranking, in terms of yards allowed in the running game, they're fairly low on terms of defense. But the biggest thing is that the Chiefs defense is tops in, or at least near the top, in turnovers and red zone and just overall scoring. And it's because they tend to like being able to be aggressive with a smaller number of guys in the front seven. And basically, they play a lot out of their nickel. I mean, they're fairly rarely in their base defense, and so they're comfortable having lighter bodies in there, which means that they're a little bit susceptible to the run, but they're comfortable with, like, letting teams move around in the middle of the field on them with the running game, as long as they can clamp it down and keep them from scoring once they get into the red zone and once there's a shorter field there.
So in all seriousness, too, with the Raiders run game, that Derek Carr pinky, injury. They took exclusively out of the shotgun last week. So I haven't seen any of the practice reports this week. I don't know if he's getting up under center or not, but I know that Pinky's bothering him. So they're definitely going to line up in the shotgun, which, you know, obviously is going to impact your run game a little bit. I'm sure that on a lot of their run schemes, they would like to be under center where you can stretch the ball out. So that's one aspect of the game that I'm a little worried about as far as that goes. But I think the holes are going to be there, and it's going to be, you know, a good old fashioned punch you in the mouth and see how you respond kind of game.
Well, my big question in terms of the Chiefs offense is just how are you guys going to deal with the weirdly fairly deep plethora of weapons that the Chiefs now have developed. It's not just about Macklin, who we haven't even seen in a month. But now we have Tyreek Hill, who can stretch things deep. He can do all sorts of stuff in terms of the misdirection plays behind the line of scrimmage. And we have Travis Kelce, your favorite reality TV star, who is coming off of three straight 100-yard games, and you guys are typically awful at covering him. So what do you think they do on defense to even slow the Chiefs down?
So I think that it's going to be the gimmick plays, the misdirection stuff, the Tyreek stuff. I mean, you guys are he's not going to surprise anyone. He's not going to sneak up on us. We've got some film on that guy. We've seen some of the things you're trying to do. And so I'm not expecting there to be any real surprises. The fake punts, some of the garbage stuff you guys have been using to play against some of the other teams in the league. I don't think we're going to be caught off guard for that. Macklin is back, but he's not 100%. He hasn't played for a while. I know he's got a good, strong record of not dropping passes, but let's kick the rust off on him. I think Sean Smith is going to have, you know, going back home, he's going to have a big game in front of his hometown, or in front of his old team, to let you guys know that you probably should have given him what he was asking for. So I think he's going to be fired up. David Amerson has been playing really well. He played 70 snaps last season. Last week, he's back from his injury. I'm expecting both those guys to have big games. The Tyreek Hill and then Kelce across the middle, I do think are going to present some problems. The Raiders linebacking core is a little bit banged up. That's one position that they were not able to beef up this offseason. The only thing that I'm hoping for is, since I lost that bet and had to watch that terrible show, is, you know, Kelce, now he's got a girlfriend. She's at home all the time. I mean, when he's out in Atlanta, he's on the road, he's having a good time, he's living it up. Now he's back home, he's got to see her every day. That's got to mess with his psyche, get into his mindset. And, I mean, he's probably just waiting to get back out on the road again. He doesn't like to be back in Kansas City. And I think, you know, it's got to mess with him. Now he's not catching Kelce. She caught him. And now, you know, the fun is over. The TV show is over. The cameras are off. They're not going out on the $4 million yachts. They're living real life. And she's pissed off that he didn't empty the dishwasher, you know? I mean, I'm not worried about Kelce at home.
All right. Well, someone's probably worried about him at home. But it's time.
Speaking of which, I think that having watched that terrible show left me with a terrible taste in my mouth every time that I watch it. I'll put a little wager on the line to kind of double down on this matchup. And the next time you have to do the Sunday recap shows, instead of having your three fingers of gin or three fingers of bourbon or scotch, if the Raiders win in Arrowhead, pretty much putting them in the driver's seat to at least make the playoffs, if not win the division, rather than drink the stuff you're used to, I say you got to go out and buy yourself a liqueur called Tequila Rose that tastes like strawberry milk, and you have to drink three fingers of that while you're doing the recap show so that I can hear the disgust in your voice while you're doing the recap show when the Raiders come in and, you know, break your heart.
All right, I accept that wager, and I'm going to give you one that on the other end of this that won't suck up nearly as much of your time as catching Kelce did, and that is just simply that in the game, well, I guess in the next week, where you're having to discuss with the Next Fan Up podcast, because I guess we won't have the recap of this game, but perhaps in the week following, with your signature bellowing of touchdown Raiders, instead, it's going to be the voice of Mitch Holthus, touchdown Kansas City, is what I want to hear from you.
Send me the link. I'll pull it up on YouTube. I'll see what I can do. I think that I accept those terms.
All right, good. So now that we've dealt with the terms of battle, what is your prediction here?
I think short week sucks. Thursday night football sucks. Everyone hates it. They're talking about getting rid of it. So the Raiders, who, you know, are putting up a significant number of points, I'm checking it right now, they're third in the NFL at 28.7 points per game, which is over your middle of the pack, 23 points a game from Kansas City. I don't know if the Raiders are going to get quite up to 28 points. I think they might have to settle for field goals against your defense more than, you know, they're used to, but they have been on a roll since that loss in Oakland in the monsoon. By the way, I checked the weather report and Kansas City is going to be clear. No precipitation to worry about. The Raiders have been averaging, you know, 3-4 touchdowns a week. And so I'm going to put this game close. You got the 3-point home court advantage, but I think that the Raiders are going to go into Kansas City, keep it rolling, and they're going to come out on top 27-24. And you're going to be drinking strawberry milk tequila rose on Sunday, and I'm going to be retweeting it as often as I can.
Fair enough. Well, the Raiders may be averaging 28 points per game, but when they came into, well, actually, rather, when they were at home to the Chiefs earlier this year, they had their lowest scoring outing of the season with 10 points. You know what? I think, you know, maybe you guys have learned a few lessons. You figured it out. And so I'm going to spot you 7 points, and I'm going to give the Chiefs one extra point, just one, for being at home. Chiefs win 27-17 as just a little bump on that earlier matchup. There's a ton of things going in the Chiefs' favor in this one. I would love to predict a blowout just because I don't know, it just feels like all the omens are going the right way. But I know that, you know, pride comes before the fall. So just a 10-point win.
Longtime listeners of the podcast will know that the curse of Pod Vader's boyfriend is always looming, just like the curse of the Madden cover. And this is as good a week as any for your Chiefs to fall flat and start a different kind of streak for the rest of the year.
All right, we shall see. Well, we put out basically an entire show's worth of content on this one matchup, so I hope you all have enjoyed it. Send us your emails to nextfunup@gmail.com and hit up Monty and I before, during, and after the show. On Twitter, I am at Clayton Nicholas. Monty is at Montsadius. That's Montsadius, I think.
And I just got an email from a fan. His name's also Monty. He's a Raiders fan. It's the weirdest thing. Said, Nick is dirty. That's all the email said. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Weird. All right. Well, good game. I hope we both come out of this, you know, with no more injuries than we went in with. And I just hope it's fun.
Yeah. One thing we can agree on is thank goodness that the Broncos are not leading the division.
Whew. Yeah. That feels good.
All right. So Nick and Monty mentioned it a few times, the curse of Pod Vader. But I got to tell you, there's only been one team that's been my boyfriend's, and that has been the Kansas City Chiefs all season long. Yes, I said my eye was sort of, you know, I had a roving eye, and I really liked what the Raiders are doing, and I still really like what the Raiders are doing. But history says a short week, rivalry game, at Arrowhead. Does anyone else hear a bell? I could have sworn I just heard a bell. Short week, rivalry game at Arrowhead. You take the home team, and they're my boyfriends, and I'm taking the Kansas City Chiefs here to take control of that AFC West division. It's going to come down to the wire. Those three teams, the Raiders, Chiefs, and Broncos, are going to be at it all the way to week 17. So it's going to be a fun one to watch. And we're going to be here to recap it, preview it, talk about it, do whatever we have to do about it all season long. So please tell a friend, get them involved. We'll be here during the playoffs. We'll be here after the playoffs. And we want to hear from you. NextFanUp@gmail.com is our email address. Just like Nick, and I can vouch, Nick is not the Nick who is our super fan. It was another Nick who happens to be a Chiefs fan. I don't know about that Monty email, though. I'm pretty sure Monty, our super fan, made that one up. But email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can always go to our Facebook page for all of that. Share with a friend. Leave us a review on iTunes. It helps your friends find our podcast when you leave us a review. So please do that. And hey, have a great time. Enjoy this game and enjoy our previews coming up tomorrow. All the Sunday matchups, we'll be breaking them down here on the Next Fan Up Podcast. I'm out of here. Here's Jeff Fisher.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.